Hello, it's Thursday, March 28th, and welcome to Paper Cuts, where we tried giving up reading the news for Lent, but failed miserably. We're here to go on an Easter egg hunt through the papers every day, piling up the tasty delights, then eating them all in one go, even if boffins warn us not to. If you want to overindulge on something else this Easter, remember you can join the Paper Cuts Supporters Club. Visit back.papercutsshow.com, where you can sign up to get special extra bits. But if you're already a supporter, or you're not able to sign up at the moment, here's a way you can help us out for free. Share the link papercutsshow.co.uk to three of your friends. Send them a text, a WhatsApp, or slide into their DMs. Sharing and caring, the true spirit of Easter, aside from the whole crucifixion and the corpse in a cave bit. Now, here are the headlines for today's edition. High as a pike, sewage scandal leaves fish drugged up. Rotten eggs, the papers give their interesting takes on Easter. Tickle your fancy, the Independent laments the crush crash that comes with aging. Welcome to Paper Cuts. We read the papers so you don't have to. Thanks for joining us on Paper Cuts, where we chew through the chocolate on the outside of the papers to get to the gooey cream egg centre. I'm Jacob Jarvis, and I'm here today with LBC host and fellow cream egg evangelist, Natasha Devon. Hello, Natasha.
Hello, really want a cream egg now.
And joining us is stand-up comedian and mini-egg lover, Jessica Foster-Cue. Hello, Jessica.
Hello, morning.
So what have we got on the front pages today? Natasha, let's start with you.
Well, the Eye is leading with a bit of a weird flex, I'll be honest. A lot of the papers have focused on the sewage in our rivers and seas crisis, but the Eye are saying Labour attacked for feeble plan on Britain's sewage crisis. Yeah. The only thing I can think is that it's just become boring to say 14 years of Tories, everything's broken. So they're trying to find a fresh spin on it. They've also got a sort of middle class presenting white woman looking sad with a packet of Spam. My Year at a Food Bank, and Greg Davis, sex symbol. And they've put Yes Really as though this would be impossible to believe, but I've never met a heterosexual woman who doesn't get that.
Oh, really? Fair.
The Times are leading with Johnson had the right idea on levelling up, says Starmer. When you investigate that headline a little bit more, not quite fair. What Starmer and Rayner, who have co-authored a piece for The Times, are actually saying is the white paper where the idea for levelling up came from was correct, but it was appallingly executed. So Boris Johnson deserves no credit whatsoever. No. And Sunak tells of his struggle to be a good father, boring snore. The Guardian...
I bet it's hard when you're married to a billionaire. It must be hard to be a really good dad sort of with that too.
I can't even bring myself to think about it. The Guardian is leading with a much more kind of sensible and straightforward take on the sewage in our rivers and seas. And that takes up the entirety of their front page. And then The Telegraph leads with the King giving thanks to the public for extending the hand of friendship, not directly mentioning Kate or his health issues, but it's thought to be euphemistically what he's talking about. Mm. Ministers prepare to end court sittings behind closed doors. They've made it sound as though this is all about transparency and justice, but just a warning that Jonathan Gullis thinks that this is a good idea. And therefore, it's probably not. And The Telegraph think that it's a good idea. And then they're also talking about the triple lock on pensions, not all that it appears. In fact, when you add it all up, pensioners will only be £20 a year better off.
Which is, it'll buy a few Easter eggs, I suppose, at this time of year. Jessica, what have you got?
Okay, the front of the Daily Mail. Could Rishi gamble on a summer election? Big question mark. They don't answer that question. They're just asking it.
Julie, it's almost like they might want him to. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, who knows? Julie Birchall says she's deeply ashamed about having spread rumours about Kate. And then there's a picture of Gillian Anderson and Billy Piper, who have been at the premiere of the new movie that they're both in. The front cover of The Sun says that fatness runs in genes. It's inherited. Nothing can do about it. Cool. And that a really sad lead story there, that George from Gogglebox has died only age 40 in a falling from a warehouse in an accident at work. Ooh. Yeah, brutal. So, yeah, that's The Sun. And the front cover of The Mirror is a piece by Paul O'Grady's husband. It's been a year since he died, and it sort of teases that there are stories from the last moments of his life. That's yeah. that's all of that. And them yeah. sharing a moment. And then the Daily Star. So whereas, I don't think I'll ever say this, but the Mirror have gone for quite a sort of sensitive sort of memorial piece on Paul O'Grady. Daily Star have run with the front page saying, Gabby Roslin saying she's being haunted by the ghost of Paul O'Grady. And then there's a picture of them standing together. I don't know whether that was taken in the last year or not.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll never know.
He doesn't look transparent as
no,
far as
he's
I can
pretty,
see.
Yeah, if anything, he's come back. Yeah, he's still really does look like he's actually there. So, I mean, I'm sort of leaning me towards believing in ghosts, yeah. actually. How present and sort of very alive and well he looks in that photo. Potentially only taken a few days ago of him and Gabby.
There's worse yeah. people to be haunted by, I think, yeah. than Paul O'Grady. I think
oh, my word.
Fun.
So many were. Yeah.
He'd be in my
yeah,
top
yeah.
five of people yeah. I would yeah. want to be haunted by.
I'd love to be haunted by Paul. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you ever been stuck in a kitchen at 4 a.m. with someone whose eyes look like bin lids talking to you about drum and bass? It's a scenario none of us like to be in. Now, imagine if that person was a fish. Is this the storyline of a horror movie? Well, not yet, but I'm tempted to write it. And if I did, it would be inspired, at least in part, by true events. Fish have a cocaine problem. This is linked to the ongoing scandal around sewage, with reports stating sewage spills in rivers and the seas around England doubled in 2023. Let's start with the coked up fish who are getting gacky off sewage, though, first. The Star has this on its front page. Jessica, what is going on with these fish?
So it's not just cocaine, it's all sorts of amphetamines, ecstasy and antidepressants that we are we're pooing into the sea. It's all the raw sewage that's being dumped into the sea and in the rivers. And it's not just fish either, crabs.
Crabs.
Yeah, crabs and other sea creatures. They're keeping it broad. Yeah, they're all absolutely out of their noodle. They're making it sound really fun in there.
Would you be more scared of a coked up crab or a coked up fish? I'm not sure which I'd want to encounter. The sort of the pincers of the crab would worry me somewhat.
Yeah, the crab's sort of got natural armour. Yeah, but you do know you could just, yeah, direction-wise probably outfox a crab quite easily.
Yeah, 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 that might
yeah,
be the way to go
it's
about
tricky,
it.
Isn't it? Yeah, and I think the thing is, by the sounds of most of those drugs, most of them would just want to dance and a cuddle. I don't know if I'd be scared yeah. of either.
Yeah, it could be quite nice, sort of... Dr. Doolittle, Snow Whitey style thing with a load of drugged up fish could be quite fun. Jessica, there is, you know, let's turn to it being a little bit serious here, though. Mm. The sewage is, you know, there's quite a lot going on. Natasha, can you talk me through some of the more serious stories we've got? The Guardian, as you mentioned, decided to, well, they're, you know, their front pages are never exciting, so they've gone for their usual.
I mean, if you wanted some comprehensive coverage of this, I would say that the Guardian is the paper to read today. And they answer this question because I just think your average person doesn't know how much shit is too much shit in a river or a sea.
Okay.
It's not most people's area of expertise, is it? So they've quite comprehensively answered that question. They've given us percentages. So Anglian Water, 205% increase. Wessex Water, 186% increase. One of the worst rivers in England is the River Darwen, which is near Blackburn. They've got very specific with it. The thing that really concerns me about this is apparently the Environment Agency and Ofwat have been investigating water companies now for 2 years. 2 years is a long time to conclude what apparently the Guardian already knows.
Yeah.
And it's also enough time for people to become really seriously ill as a result.
Yeah.
I'm from Dorset and all my friends who swam every day have had to stop because of how routinely they were ill. And there are apps that you can get to chart, like, basically, if it's been raining, you can't swim in the sea because there will be a load of raw sewage in there. It's a dark, dark time where the only people, like, the person doing most about this in our country is comedian Joe Lycett.
Yeah, Fergal Sharkey as well. Like, when you need the lead singer of the Undertones to be the champion for this, which he does a great job of, but you think maybe some politicians. Well, I wrote a story in a past life with the headline, "Cocaine in the River Thames is another problem eels don't need," says expert. And that was in 2019. Mm. So it's not like a new problem
with the drugged up animals and with all of this going in there. Jessica, I find public swimming pools a little bit daunting sometimes, purely because, you know, you can see kind of plasters on the bottom of the floor or whatever, and I think, oh, someone's definitely pissed in here, haven't they? Does this make you want to never swim in the sea again?
No, it makes me want to sort this out so that I can swim in the sea again. Yeah. I really love swimming in the sea. I feel like old lady enraged about this. I can't believe it's been allowed to go on for so long. I've been reading about it I'm into this. And to me, there's so many profits still being made by these water companies. It beggars belief that they're not under more pressure or a definitive amount of pressure to actually fix this. And the only kind of vaguely logical sounding argument I've heard a politician give as to why we can't do this and instantly is because of the way the infrastructure set up would mean we'd have to dig up quite a lot of pavements and roads to rebuild the water system so that it works and doesn't burst every time there's a lot of rainfall. We're always digging up the pavements and the roads. This is a brilliant reason to need to do this. If we can do it for potholes, we can do it because our rivers and seas are full of shit.
Yeah.
Surely.
Yeah, I read there's a piece about super sewer being built somewhere. So hopefully, I mean, let's just build loads of super sewers.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, pitching things like HS2 and cancelling it, let's channel some of the money into, yeah, all hail the super sewer.
And I think as well, we're sort of making it sound as if the only reason that we need to do this is so that we can all have a lovely swim in the sea again. There are other creatures other than humans that do need to use that sea that we're pumping all of our turds into. So, yeah, it's more imperative than just us open water swimming fanatics.
When you think about Easter, do you think of Jesus or chocolate eggs? I bet it's the latter, isn't it, you sugar-fueled heathens? Well, the papers have also been thinking about Easter a lot lately, and they're writing all about it on the eve of Good Friday. Papercut's favourite, Alison Pearson, has a lot to say. She's written a piece in The Telegraph with the headline, "When did Easter become an exercise in indulging pointless novelty?" And this starts with the line, "I ask you, how far wrong can you go with a hot cross bun? A Good Friday treat decorated with a cross to represent the crucifixion of Jesus Christ? Very wrong indeed." Natasha, what is Alison Pearson on about?
Well, I think the first thing to say about this piece is I don't think I've ever been as angry about anything as Alison Pearson is about hot cross buns. Or sort of proclaims to be in this piece. At one point she says, "These Frankensteins of Easter tradition are getting more and more monstrous." I mean, this is just such hyperbolic language to describe what is essentially some bread. But...
Hey, it's not just bread. It's Jesus crucifixion bread. Come on.
Jesus
died bread. For us to eat that bread.
Grapes died for the raisins.
But ultimately, her beef is Iceland have been selling hot tick buns, which have what looks a bit like the Nike tick on top of them, as a fun alternative, not instead of hot cross buns, as an additional offering.
Of course.
But she's absolutely incandescent with rage. Apparently, this contravenes the entire spirit of Easter, and we should all be thoroughly ashamed of ourselves.
Hot cross buns, that much the spirit of Easter. This piece reads a bit to me like she's just discovered capitalism. Iceland have worked out a way to sell more hot cross buns. Of course they have. That's just all this is. Are there any other standout lines of outrage from her within there, other than Frankenstein's? I mean, I feel like we could just read the whole piece, essentially.
It's amazing. She's put, "Fortunately, Christ's good news to the world, Jesus's resurrection after such suffering and doubt means that there is always hope, stands the test of time."
The Bible, one thing you have to say about it, is it does stand the test of time. When you think about a lot of books, they can get outdated, but the Bible, it's had longevity, I suppose, other than, you know, the whole stoning people and the way they speak about women, etc. But, you know, it's stood up. And,
just this morning, I was coveting my neighbour's oxen, actually.
Jessica, there's some more rage as well, isn't there, about basically... there's a war on Easter and how we shouldn't be eating so much chocolate and stuff like that. The sun's gone pretty big on this, hasn't it?
Yeah, the Sun is, well, I have to say there's a lot of, I'm going to call it quite confusing messaging in the Sun. Sort of front page of the Sun says, you can't really help what your weight is. It's in your genes. But by page 9, a doctor is saying, go easy on chalk. I'm pretty sure in reality, in the interview, he'd have used the whole word chocolate
as
a doctor. But the Sun have assumed that's probably me tired out now.
Yeah, or maybe he'd
that
he'd
far
use
into that word. Probably because I'm on my own sugar crash by this time in the week. But they effectively have done a couple of paragraphs reminding people that chocolate isn't nutritionally excellent and a fully, it's not a meal. It hasn't got all the groups. You're not going to get many vitamins, etc. I think we can relatively safely assume that most people over the age of 5 already understand that. That Cadbury's cream egg and an apple are going to do something different physiologically to their body.
That's actually my lunch today, is a Cadbury cream egg and an apple.
Yeah, yin and yang, lovely.
I'm just looking at the headline across the table and thinking there's such a missed opportunity there, isn't there, to do a pun around Doc Chalk.
Yeah.
Doc Chalk, yeah. I don't really trust anyone who doesn't eat an Easter egg all in one go. What's your thoughts on what this doctor is trying to say? To me, he's advising people to behave like psychopaths.
Take each egg slowly. Do you know what? I'm going to sound very patronising. I grew out of eating them in one go.
Okay, really?
I did go in like that as a child. And I think because Easter was spent with cousins in my case, but siblings, it was a bit of a but then I had one cousin who could always, you'd do your Easter egg hunt, you'd have your basket, and she'd be there next February with a couple left taunting you. And I think there's cruelty in that, but some restraint.
See, I've switched. When I was a child, I would sort of savour Easter chocolate and Christmas chocolate. And then now I just think, I'm a grown man and this is my money. I'm going to buy all the Easter eggs and I'll eat them whenever I like.
Do you know what? One of us has been parented well and I can't work out which it is. I, as a child, was like, no, it's my time. And now I'm like, I can have that whenever I want, so I don't have to have it.
I know the barcode for cream eggs off by heart. That's how much I like them. It's 50201600 if anyone needs it, if it doesn't scan at the checkout.
Amazing. One of the biggest product design failures of our time.
Of course.
Is the single Cadbury's cream egg when it comes to self-service checkout, unbeepability, but probably actually a capitalist scam all along, so they're forced to buy a box of 5.
There's an angry people in local newspaper-esque story at the minute as well from Lincolnshire Live, my home county, which is going on about gesture eggs. Yeah. Are you really outraged by the notion of gesture eggs instead of Easter eggs? So it's this Cadbury's store in Spalding, which is a fairly nice place, I believe, but they've had an Easter egg that they've called a gesture egg, and apparently this is the wokest thing on earth and an affront to you might as well have spat on a crucifix is the way they're acting about it. It's like that scene from The Exorcist, but the Easter version.
The Sun have covered this, and you pointed it out earlier, Natasha. This is brilliant. Fans and Christian groups have been criticising this. That really covers everyone.
A Christian, I'm just a fan of Jesus.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Who are they fans? Are they fans of Easter eggs?
I liked his early work. I loved what he did in the mystery years.
Lost it by the third album.
Yeah.
The headlines are the sugariest bit of the papers, powering us through the dull, non-carb-based bits of the news. In fact, we love headlines so much that we've created the world's first ever, citation needed, headline competition. Yes, it's time for the Easter special edition of Fix the Headline. We find a great story with a meh headline, and we ask you, the loyal Papercuts listeners, to think up a better one. And this week, we found one in The Star. This is about an international beer festival in Manchester, which made the classic mistake of overpromising and under-delivering. The Star's headline, Wonka Festival of Beer. Pretty boring, that is. If you think you can do better, you definitely can. Then send your idea to @PaperCutsShow on Threads or X. Twitter, but I hate saying X, which with the hashtag FixTheHeadline, the winner gets a Papercuts t-shirt. So in the papers today, what gems have we spotted? Natasha, what have you got?
Well, in the Daily Star on page 3, they're talking about people picking funny funeral songs for their own funeral ahead of time. So you have Going Underground by The Jam, apparently, is the top choice. You've got Back in Black by AC/DC. And the headline is Burn Baby Burn, which is the second most popular choice. Now, what this made me think of, I recently went to go and see Ed Byrne, the comedian's new show, which is about his brother dying. Okay. It's funnier than it sounds. And his brother was the youngest, and he had Burn Baby Burn played at his funeral, which works on lots of levels. Yeah, just think about it. Let that marinate.
It's like if they were cremated as well. I mean, that's a way for it. So you've also got page 11 in the Star.
Yeah, so I think this headline's a bit crap. Boffins have invented a real-life invisibility cloak. It's interesting because in both of the pictures of this cloak, people's head and feet are both visible. And I don't know whether that's to show the power of the invisibility cloak, because if they were wearing it top to toe, it would just be a picture of nothing.
Just, yeah,
or
just a
whether
landscape.
It's only available in a sort of short form that would leave your head poking out the top.
I'm hoping it's to illustrate it, because it's a sort of seascape they've used. It would look just kind of like a Gerard Richter painting.
if it were just him covered. There is a person. Yeah. That would have been better, I think. These are the questions that need answering. But the
I could do it like an Athena magic eye picture. You have to cross and uncross your eyes to see the person.
I loved magic eye.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, the headline is A Wizard Invention.
Okay. Wizard is, I'm told, slang for good.
As in chitty chitty bang bang. It's wizard. Okay. It's smashing.
Nice. Jessica, what have you got?
Okay, page 3 of The Sun. There's a picture and a small story about when Mike Tyson... Yeah, well, basically, he was famous for biting the ear off someone he was fighting, and he's now brought out some cannabis sweets in the shape of an ear that's had a bit of it bitten out.
Of course he has.
Oh, it's my response to that. And headline is, float like a biter guy.
I quite like that. I think it's quite good, to be honest. Yeah. Float like a biter guy. I don't know what he stings like. Would have to ask the Star to...
Sting like a cheat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sting like a thug. What can I say? I like
rules. Mike, if you're listening, like please don't come down to the studio, I beg. So you've also got page 26 in The Sun.
Yeah, where a nifty squirrel has grabbed some breakfast through a little crack in a window after scaling some scaffolding on a housing estate. And residents are sick of this. They're sick of having their food stolen as work drags on. It's happening in Southwark and South London. And the headline is, Nut Yours.
Nice. That's quite good. Look, any squirrel content is going to get a thumbs up from me. They're very cute, aren't they?
They are very cute. And actually, so we've got some plants outside the front of our house, so there isn't really a garden, just an area that's ours. And we kept finding, like, basically holes in these plants. And I was like, I'm worried that, like, a burglar is, like, casing for where we've left buried a spare key. And I recently discovered it's just a squirrel. Squirrel's casing, not for burglary, but for someone to hide their nuts. And
Well, watch out in case you have a squirrel break in at some point. They could be crafty, according to this article. Yeah. When was the last time you fancied someone? Well, if you're not a hormone pumped teenager, it might have been a long time ago, according to a report in The Independent. This details a newly named phenomenon, the crush crash, and asks, why do we fancy fewer people as we get older? Natasha, can you talk me through this story?
This is an interesting piece, actually. So it's written in the first person by a journalist called Helen Coffey. Mm. And she's talking about how when she was in her 20s, she used to fancy everyone and had that feeling, which I'd forgotten about, which is when you wake up in the morning in your 20s and you think, oh, my next crush could be just around the corner, literally could be on the tube. That feeling of I could fall in love today in quite a surface level way. And then as you get older, the pool of people to whom you are attracted becomes smaller and smaller. Mm. And she's essentially asking why. And I think it's quite obvious, really, that as you get to know yourself more, you realise that you are incompatible with the vast majority of people. And that's entirely normal. But my favourite bit in this was... Now, you've got to prepare yourself for this, okay, because this is groundbreaking. I don't know if you've ever thought about this before. But she says, meanwhile, although women might struggle to find age-appropriate men to fancy, their counterparts have fewer qualms about dating younger. Leonardo DiCaprio is not alone. Data shared by OkCupid showed that men, regardless of how old they are, forever remain most attracted to women in their 20s. Not so for women who tend to be attracted to men around their own age.
No way.
Is everyone okay?
What? I know. You're going to have to talk me through that one again, actually. I'm not feeling that. There is some of it I find a little bit sad. The paragraph here, one piece of research posits that our feelings in general lessen with age. Our study suggests that older adults generally report lower levels of emotions, whether positive or negative, experiential or global, as compared with their younger counterparts. This is to do with a study, getting older, feeling less. It does what it says on the tin. I just find that quite daunting. I don't know about you two.
I find that quite dog shit. I don't think that's true. The older I get, the more emotions I'm having, if anything.
You think so?
Yeah, big time. Yeah. That's what I'm doing a show at the moment, sort of about this. I think I keep reading that that's supposed to happen, but I don't know if I'm just having an explosion of emotions before I really enter old age, but I'm only 40. Yeah. Things are, I don't know. I just don't think that's true. I care about more things. I think there's a different... I think, like, in my teens and 20s, I was overwhelmingly concerned with myself. I think we're a bit more introspective then. So you describe yourself as more emotions because you're trying to work out who you are. Mm. But I think actually how much you can care about what's happening in the world, looking outside of yourself, that increases with age.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I don't get excited about very much anymore compared to in the past. It takes a lot to make me sort of really rile up excited. If someone suggests something nice to do, I just go, yeah, that'd be cool.
Can I recommend a show on Saturday evenings called Gladiators?
Gladiators,
yeah.
Okay.
I think this could cure you of this numb heart.
Well, this is the thing. I'm pessimistic on Gladiators, actually, to be honest. Yeah, no, there's a tangent here. They're all too muscly now. It worked well when some of them were shit.
Some of them are shit. But I'm not going to say who, but Viper.
I did watch one not long ago where there was a contestant who was scared of heights and was just crying after every single game, and I just thought, this is not for you. Like, yeah, you're stacked, fair play.
Yeah.
But if you don't like heights, you don't want to be getting
That's
waxed.
That's literally
off
the only reason
things.
Why I'm not applying to go on it. Too scared of heights. Yeah, I understand. I think some of them are muscly for show though and not actually very good at the game, so still really entertaining. Yeah.
That is the number one rule of muscles, apparently. If you can see them, they're not making you any stronger.
Okay. Well, that's why I'm glad to not have any visible muscles. Jessica, what did you make of any of the explanations within this piece about why people fancy people less? Do you agree? Maybe it makes sense. I would find it very impractical if I continued to go around life constantly fancying people and then being nervous around them because I did. I feel like maybe just as you get older, you get other responsibilities, and when I was at university,
you're
I could maybe fancy everyone. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Busy.
We're just busy. It's just reordered priorities. I think that probably is something to do with it. Also, I don't know. This is so experiential and not based on studies. Like, I suppose this article sort of is.
it's pretty deep science.
Oh, you know, it's pretty heavily written. The data's strong.
That last piece, the study, getting older, feeling less, they did speak to 2,500 people.
Okay.
So that's,
that's quite a few people. That's more than me. It's more people than I've spoken to about this. I think it goes in cycles, doesn't it? Like, you know, if you're single, there'll be a patch during that singleness where, like, I don't know, like, if I got something coming up, I've had fat patches when I'm single of fancying everyone. And then there'll be times where you're like, I haven't fancied anyone for years. It just comes around. You definitely meet really old people who are really fancy. I only ever get propositioned by people who are flipping ancient. I don't know what that says about me, but like I get like properly ancient people come up to me in the co-op and that, and they are not, they've got feelings.
Yeah,
loads
yeah.
of them, too many arguably.
And that brings us to the end of today's Paper Cuts. Thank you to Natasha for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you to Jessica. You're on tour, aren't you? How can our listeners find you?
Go to my website, jessicafosterq.com, or I'm on Instagram. The show's called Metal and it's going all around the UK and Ireland right up until July. And there's a big London date at the end of June at the Leicester Square Theatre.
Lovely. Listeners, remember, we are now out 5 days a week and we'd be really grateful for your support to carry on making some semblance of sense of the papers every weekday. I don't know if that's maybe a bit too egotistical of me to suggest I've quite done that regularly, but we are a 100% independent outfit. There's no big media backer or owner behind us, and we spend around £600 a month on newspapers alone. I think we spend more on newspapers than anyone else in the world. It would be need a citation for that, but don't check me on it. It would be fantastic if you could chip in a little bit to keep Paper Cuts on the road. For as little as £3 a month, you can get 20 episodes a month without adverts. Support us with a little bit more and you can get extended episodes with extra material, plus coveted Paper Cuts mugs and t-shirts, which are occasionally modelled by our panel. John Elledge was wearing one yesterday. He loves his. Follow the show notes to back.papercutsshow.com. That's back.papercutsshow.com to find out more. Our beloved supporters also get a shout out on the show, and here are some now from Natasha and Jessica, and then me, Natasha.
Hello, and thanks a million to Genevieve OC.
Howdy, and thanks a million to Kevy Von Trevi.
Hello, and thank you a gazillion to Alan Baxter. I've been Jacob Jarvis, and you've been listening to Paper Cuts on a day when a pub in Cornwall has been stripped of the title of Pub of the Year after punters noticed Hitler memorabilia on the walls. They did not see that coming. Oof. Thank you for listening, and have a great Easter.
Paper Cuts was written and presented by Podmasters Managing Editor Jacob Jarvis, with Jessica Fostercue and Natasha Devon. The producer was Liam Tate, assistant producer was Adam Wright, and audio producer was me, Jade Bailey. Music is by Simon Williams, socials by Kieran Leslie, design by Jim Parrott, with original art by Modern Toss. The executive producer is Martin Boytosh, and the group editor is Andrew Harrison. Paper Cuts is a Podmasters production.